Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 1, 2014. It is the 5th day of the 4th lunar month, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Sunshine in the Soul. There's sunshine in my soul today, more glorious and bright than glows in any earthly sky. For Yahshua is my light. Oh, the sunshine, blessed sunshine, when the peaceful, happy moments roam. When Yahshua shows his smiling face, there is sunshine in the soul. There's music in my soul today, a carol to my King. And Yahshua listening can hear the songs I cannot say. Oh, the sunshine, blessed sunshine, and the peaceful, happy moments roll. When Yahshua showed his smiling face, there is sunshine in the soul. There's springtime in my soul today, for when the Yahshua is near, the dove of peace sings in my heart, the flowers of grace appear. Oh, the sunshine, blessed sunshine, when the peaceful, happy moments roll. When Yahshua shows his smiling face, there is sunshine in the soul. There is gladness in my soul today, and hope and praise and love. For blessings which he gives me now, for joys lit up above. Oh, the sunshine, blessed sunshine, when the peaceful, happy moments roll. When Yahshua shows his smiling face, there is sunshine in the soul. Part 4, we're going to go in to continue with our Judgment and Harvest series. We're on page 64. First, we're going to refer to a prayer thought taken from Daniel chapter 12. It says that, and at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even in that same time, and at that time thy people shall be delivered, everyone that shall be found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. But thou, O Daniel, shut up thy words, and seal the book even unto the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on that side of the bank of the river. And one said unto the man, clothed in the linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be unto the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in the linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever that it shall be for a time, times, and a half, and a half. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. And I understood, heard, but I understood not. Then said I, O my Yahshua, Yahweh, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh unto the 1,335 days. But go thou way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the days. Now let's end the prayer thought. Now let's continue with our series, Judgment and Harvest. We're on part 4. We're on page 64. And we're going to start with the subtitle, Time of the Harvest. Though the true meaning and time of the harvest is greatly confused by some, and confusing unto many, a close study of the word will clear it in just as simple manner as it cleared both the time of the seed sower and the wheat and the tares. Now we know when the wheat and the tares finished, 2002, closing out about 158 years for the Adventists, during their seed sowing time. You see, Yahshua started to see the seed sowing time at his baptism in the fall, in the seventh month, at the Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles time. And he started the seed sowing, and the seed sowing has gone on ever since. Every time Israel come into the vineyard to occupy it, she is to go in the seed sowing. Now her seed sowing is up at the end of the 11th hour. So the 12th hour now is time for the harvest. And that's what we're in now, since 2003, actually. So it says, with his eyes piercing the midst of the ages, Yahshua foresaw the negligence of his watchmen and the evil which was to spring up in his church. Nevertheless, after being asked by his servant, Didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? He said, Nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them, that both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest I will say unto the reapers, Gather together first the tares, and bind them in the bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Matthew 13:27-30. Well, the barn represents the kingdom. The binding of the tares represents a period of time. You just don't bind them all at once. You go through the field and you get you a bundle of them and you bind them, and then you get you another bundle until all of the tares have been bundled. Okay, the harvest means the result of the effort, of the toil, for the gathering of a crop, reaping the results of the labor, and filling up the barns with the grain. So rather than the year's toil being finished at the beginning of the harvest, the heaviest labor of the year just then begins. And though harvest time is the shortest of all the periods of the harvest year, the work of the reaping is not done in a moment. It takes time. The yield is not garnered by the turning the field right into the barn. No, that would be a conglomerate mass instead of a harvest. First the sickle is put to the grain, and next the grain is bound into the sheaves, and then threshed, after which it is put into the barn. And thereafter the chaff and the tares are destroyed, this work being completed during the autumn. It shows that the harvest is a season of the time after summer is past, and that it is followed by the fruitless winter period. So it must be with the spiritual harvest. which otherwise could not be illustrated by the literal. Do not regard lightly the wisdom of the Elohim. His illustrations are perfect. Consider now with what exact fidelity unto the nature, unto the natural harvest that the Master has stated, the truths of the spiritual harvest, that both go together until the harvest, he said. And in the time of the harvest I will say unto the reapers, gather ye together first the tares, then bind them in the bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Matthew 13:30. So it says, in these parabolic words, Yahshua has made the spiritual method of the harvesting analogous unto the natural method. Worthy one not precisely like the other, he would have distinguished the difference. He admonished, therefore, not to let vain imaginings come into the mind, but stand squarely on the scriptures, for they are full of the meaning of the illimitable value, or indeed your very life. And the word until means up to, for the tares are therefore to be gathered out, not before or after the harvest, but at the beginning of the harvest. And the harvest, and the time of the harvest being in the end of the probationary time, this is wrong. And he's quoting Sister White, Christ Object Lesson 72, so this is not wrong. This is wrong. I'm going to read that again. It says and of the time of the harvest, being in the midst of the 12th parabolic hour during probationary time, then the harvesting itself necessarily precedes the close of probation. I don't understand the double talk, but there you have it explained right. The fruitless winter season, consequently, where the tares are separated from among the wheat before, not after, the end of the probationary time. For the wheat, with the children of the kingdom, Matthew 13:38, are gathered into the barn, and the kingdom. For the tares is of the children of the wicked one, verse 38, are the mere professors of those who are not the doers of the word, and who were granted membership while men slept, are gathered and burned in the fire, Matthew 13:40, after the wheat is bound into the sheaves. But who are the reapers? Okay, it says, for the reapers are the angels, who shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just. Matthew 13:39 and verse 49. For these angels are not those who shall come with the Yahshua at his second coming, but rather those whom he shall send forth. They are like the three angels of Revelation 14:6-11. Indeed, the third angel is to select the wheat from the tares and seal or bind the wheat for the heavenly garner. Early Writings, page 118. Now, I want to ask you a question. V.T. Hollis is quoting Ellen G. White on this last statement. Okay, where it says that indeed, that the third angel is to select the wheat from the tares. But I can't find any place in the Revelation where it says emphatically that the third angel is to select the wheat from the tares. I don't see this at all. But now I can see the fifth angel that lines the earth with his glory. I can see the fourth angel sealing the 144,000. Well, then the 144,000 has to be sealed then after the third angel. And then again, it may be that the third angel indeed is a selected wheat from the third. Because it's the fourth angel that seals them. The fifth angel is the one that comes and harvests the second fruits, which the house of David harvests the second fruits of the fifth angel's message. Along with the 144,000, helping the 144,000 to gather these second fruits, that is gone. Therefore, the angels, the reapers, whom Yahshua sends forth, include both him who does the sealing or binding and those who follow on to do the destroying, Ezekiel 9 and 2, 5 and 6, first in the church, then in the world. Thus is a separation in the two sections. For the command, gather out of his kingdom all things that offend in them which do iniquity, does not mean to gather his saints from the earth into the heaven, neither does it mean to destroy the wicked from the earth. For the former are to be gathered, not directly into heaven, but first into the barn, the kingdom on the earth, and the latter are not to be destroyed immediately in the time of the harvest, that first are to be gathered into the bundles and then destroyed, as is further illustrated in the parable of the net. Again, the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which, when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into the vessels, but cast the bad away. Matthew 13:47-48. For this parable also shows the separation of the wicked from among the Elohim's people in the church, the net. This being the first section of the work of the separation by the beginning of the harvest, for the subsequent section follows in the world as the earth is lightened with the glory of the loud cry angel. And as another voice from the heaven says, come out of her, my people, that she be not partakers of her sins, that she receive not of her plagues, Revelation 18:4. Note that in the first section of the separation, the one in the church, the wicked, are taken away from among the just, whereas in the second, the one in the Babylon, the just are called from among the wicked. As the field is represents the world, Matthew 13:38, the parable of the wheat and the tares necessarily comprehends both sections of the harvest, as by the contrast, the net hauls in the fish, the converts made by the gospel church. For the parable of the net, therefore, is limited unto the separation in the church. Together they distinguish the relation of the first fruits unto the second fruits. Isaiah also was given a view of this twofold harvest, for by the fire and by his sword he prophesies, will the Yahweh pleadeth all flesh, and the slain of Yahweh shall be many. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens behind one tree, that's one minister, in the midst eating swine's flesh, false prophet, and the abomination, false worship, and the mouth shall be consumed together, says the Yahweh, Isaiah 66:16-17. For the slain of the Yahweh in this scripture are those who profess to be in the faith, who claim sanctification and purification, but who do so on the merits of their own righteousness of themselves, not on the merits of Yahshua's righteousness. They walk, that is, in their own ways, not in the obedience unto the truth, wrapped about with the spurious habiliments of the sanctification and purification. They pose as reformers, yet all the while indulging in the abominations of the heathen, doing so in the secret behind the one tree, or, as the margin says, following in the lead one after another, and the food, swine's flesh, the mouth, and the abomination, whatever that may be, wherever these paganistic Christians may be fools used respectively only in the Christian part of the world among different classes and races with which they are gratifying their appetite shows that the consequent destruction among the self-sanctified and self-purified ones is in the church worldwide. That it was not among the Gentiles who knew not of the truth of Elohim and of his great power is dearly shown by the Yahshua's words, I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, unto Tarsus, full of love, that draw the bow, unto Tubal and Avan, and for the Gentile nations today as called by their ancient names. So the isles are far off that have not heard my fame, now they have seen my glory, and they shall be declare my glory among the Gentiles. Isaiah 6:19. Since these escaped ones, the first fruits, the 144,000 servants of the Elohim, Matthew 7:3, shall bring all your brethren, the second fruits, the great multitude, Revelation 7:9, for an offering out of all nations, Isaiah 66:20, first part. This great ingathering necessarily, therefore, is of the closing work of the gospel for the Seventh-day Adventist Church and the three angels' messages closing out the judgment of the dead at the end of the 11th hour, parabolic hour, that's the last hour that was allocated to the Adventists. Because they were the fourth group laborers called in Matthew 20:5, called at the end of the ninth hour, to work respectively in the 10th and 11th parabolic hour over the next 158 years. And so they closed out the judgment of the living and the gospel work for the vineyard of Yahweh host of the house of Israel. They were only work was to work for their own people. As people join the Adventist Church worldwide, wherever the Adventists went to harvest people, then they were to work for their people that they harvested and bring them to perfection. They brought them into the kingdom. Now, they, in this case, the Adventists, the most they could do was to start cleaning them up after they got them in, because that's what they taught. They taught, says, we're like a nursery, we're like a hospital. We bring them in and then we clean them up. No. You make them come as clean as possible. You bring them in and then you teach them perfection by the advancing truth as it opens up on a day-by-day basis. That was the work of the Advent. But not so in the 12th parabolic hour. Because the Adventists have done their work in the seed sowing and now they have born fruit, the first fruit 144,000, and 144,000 are sealed with perfection. And so that being the case, it's a whole different story. And since furthermore these escaped ones are to bring all their brethren unto my holy mountain, Jerusalem, says Yahweh, in a clean vessel into the house of Yahweh, Isaiah 6:20, last part. For the fact is fully evident that the destruction of the wicked results in the purification of the church. Well, Gilead Center were destroyed. So apparently we had a purification of the section of that church in 2002 at Kermit, Gilead Center. For the clean vessel is therefore the purified church, and that would be the house of David. Composed of escaped ones, okay, so there was three of us escaped, representing the purified church up to that point. Through the first fruits, 144,000, who free from the wicked, the terrors, shall then, as the servants of Elohim, bring in the second fruits, the great multitude which no man can number, out of all nations. For the second section of the separation, thus being Katie's probationary time is closed, whereupon from the wicked will be heard the horrible wail of the doom. The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. Jeremiah 8:20. This being of the dreadful experience of the tares in the Babylon, and the second section of the harvest, there must be as a type, be a similar and preceding experience for the tares and the later sin church. In the first section of the harvest, a parallel which shows conclusively that the church is not Babylon. For the reason that the church is figuratively not Babylon is that it is called Jerusalem, Ezekiel 9:4-8. And from among the good therein, the wicked, the tares, are destroyed, taken out by the sixth man with the slaughter weapons, Ezekiel 9:6-9. And then afterwards, the good, the wheat, are gathered in the barn, while from among the wicked and the Babylon, the just, my people, are called out and gathered into the barn. And then the seven angels pour out the seven last plagues, and the remaining wicked are destroyed. Thus, in the first section of the harvest, the separation and the church, the wicked are destroyed by the sixth man with the slaughter weapons, before the good are taken out. And in the second section, the separation among the churches in the Babylon, the wicked are destroyed by the seven angels with the seven last plagues. After the good are taken out, there are therefore two separations and two fruits. The former gives the first fruits, the 144,000 who are not defiled with the women, Revelation 14:4. That is, there are those whom the seed message finds in the church of Elohim, not in the heathen churches, and which would be the Seventh-day Adventist church as well. And the second gives the second fruits, the great multitude from all the nations, a son of whom also may be undefiled with the women's heathen clothes, having to do up to this point studied the judgment of the harvest in the light of the testimonies of the prophets and the parables of the Yahshua. We shall now examine it in the light of the ceremonial service. Just as the spirit of the prophecy declares that the whole system of the types and symbols was a compacted prophecy of the gospel, the presentation of which were bound up the promises of the redemption, the Acts of the Apostles, page 14, just so the plan of salvation is unfolded not only in the testimonies of the prophet and in the parable of the Yahshua, but also in the types and symbols of the earthly sanctuary. In addition to this, the experiences of the people in the typical period happen unto them, we are told, for in samples, and they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come, 1 Corinthians 10:11. It says, so we are logically bound at the very outset to attend unto Elohim's instructions unto Moses on the 10th day of the 7th month. This shall be a day of the atonement, make an atonement for you before the Yahweh your Elohim, for whatsoever soul it be, that shall not be afflicted in that same day, he shall be cut off from among his people, make an atonement for the children of Israel, once a year, Leviticus 23:27-29, Leviticus 16:34, when one is cut off from among the people on account of sin, and his name must also be blotted out of the book of the living, Psalm 69:28. Consequently, the day of the atonement was the day of the judgment, as it is still commonly called by the Jews, and by that token, it was founded as a type of the great and typical day of the atonement, the investigative judgment, for the day in which the Yahweh will blot from his book the names of all sinners, and cut off from the congregation of his people all those names that are not in the book. Concerning the typical day of the atonement, the Yahweh commands through Moses was, on that day shall the priest make an atonement for you to cleanse you, that you may be clean from all your sins before the Yahweh. And he shall make an atonement for the holy sanctuary, and he shall make an atonement for the tabernacle of the congregation, and for the altar, Leviticus 16:30-33. Being at the Day of the Atonement in the tabernacle for both the dead and the living, this service of the earthly tabernacle therefore projects the Day of the Atonement in the cenotaph, the cleansing of the sanctuary in the heaven from the unworthy names in the books, and the cleansing of the church on the earth from its unconverted and unstable members, thus bringing the time of the clean books, clean church, and clean people. This is what we're working up to today. We're getting up to that point. Looking forward unto this day of the purification, Zechariah prophesies, in that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses holiness unto the Yahweh, and the pots in the Yahweh's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto the Yahshua of the host, and in that day there shall be no more of the Canaanite in the house of the Yahshua of the host. Zechariah 14:20-21. Envisioning the same scene, the prophet Isaiah declared, and the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name which the mouth of the Yahweh shall name. Thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahweh, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy Elohim. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken. Thou shalt be called Hephzibah, the holy people. Isaiah 62:2-4 and verse 12. But ye that forsake the Yahweh, that forget my holy mountain, that's the house of David, ye shall leave your name for a curse unto my chosen. That's also the house of Antipater Elijah. For the Yahweh Elohim shall slay thee and call his servants by another name. Isaiah 65:11-15. It's exactly what happened starting in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. He started judging the living, and he slew the ancient men before the house, and he called his new leaders and his new movement and his new temple. He called it by another name. For the people that doth not understand shall fall. Hosea 4:14. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Daniel 12:10. Under those whose vision is clear on the truth of the harvest, as taught in the testimonies of the prophets and in the parables, will have a still clearer vision as we study the significance of the wave sheaf, wave loaves, and the feast of the tabernacles. Illustrating our salvation in the completeness, the harvest rites of the ceremonial system must therefore corroborate both the testimonies of the prophets and the parables concerning the harvest, for all are inextricably bound up together, for the ceremonies of the first and the second fruits of the grain must accordingly unfold with the truth concerning of the first and second fruits of the humanity. In the Levitical law we read, ye shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest, and he shall weigh the sheaf before the Yahweh to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath the priest shall weigh it. And ye shall eat neither bread, nor parched corn, nor green ears, until the selfsame day that ye have brought an offering unto your Elohim, and ye shall count unto you from tomorrow after Sabbath, from the day that ye brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. Even unto tomorrow after the 7th Sabbath shall ye number 50 days, and ye shall offer a new meat offering unto the Yahweh. Ye shall bring out of your habitations 2 wave loaves of the 2 tenths deal. They shall be of the fine flour. They shall be baking with leaven. They are the first fruits unto the Yahweh. Also on the 15th day of the 7th month, and you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto the Yahweh 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the 8th day shall be a Sabbath. Leviticus 23:10, 11, 14-17, and 39. Here we see commanding the observance of the 3 harvest rites. Number 1, the ceremony of the wave sheaf at the beginning of the first harvest. Number 2, the ceremony of the wave loaves at the close of the first harvest. And number 3, the feast of the tabernacle at the close of the second harvest. Being typical, these 2 grain harvests with the 3 literal sacraments accordingly foreshadow two sower harvests with the three spiritual rods, the first of which is the first fruits with the wave sheaf and wave loaves. Being of cut stalks of the grain, the wave sheaf signified the fruits to be harvested, and as the sheaf was to be offered before the sickle was put to the grain and gathered into the sheaf, it obviously pointed forward unto a spiritual harvest of the first fruits to be gathered on the Pentecost 50 days after the typical sheaf was offered. All Israel were to offer a new meat offering unto the Yahweh, two wave loaves baking with the leaven, the first fruits unto the Yahweh, Leviticus 23:16-17. Both the wave sheaf and the wave loaves were thank offerings for the first fruits. One was dedicated at the beginning of the harvest and the other at the completion of it. In the contrast unto the wave sheaf of the cut stalks of the grain, prefiguring fruits to be gathered after the sheaf was offered, that is, the offering of the wave loaves being a finished product signified fruits previously gathered. The reader who would best comprehend the significance of the three ceremonial celebrations are important to our salvation will follow the chart on page 77 as we proceed. It will be observed that the command regarding the observance of the seventh-day Sabbath as well as that regarding observance of the yearly ceremonial feast is recorded in the 23rd chapter of the Leviticus, verse 3. Care, therefore, must be exercised not to confuse the one truth with the other. For the wave sheaf was to be offered on the morrow after Sabbath, that is, on the first day of the week, now commonly called Sunday. This offering was to be presented not on a special day of the month, but rather on a special day of the week, before the sickle was put unto the grain and gathered into the sheaves, Leviticus 23:11-14. Coming just at the right time in the season of the first fruits, the Passover week was the period in which the wave sheaf was usually offered before the Yahweh, its ritual prophetically projecting the Assyrian antitype of the wave sheaf. For more than 1,000 years, the annual waving of the sheaf pointed forward into its antitypical event, the resurrection of Yahshua, and as the Yahshua arose on the very day that the wave sheaf was to be offered, the day after the Sabbath, that no one attributed the singular concurrence of these two events on that day to mere coincidence or unto any cause other than a divine design. He was the antitype of the wave sheaf, declares the spirit of the prophecy, and his resurrection took place on the very day when the wave sheaf was to be presented before the Yahweh. His hour of ages, page 785. So Yahshua, the first fruits, and those who with him at his resurrection came forth from the grave, raised unto everlasting life, were the antitypical wave sheaf of the dead. And since the wave sheaf of the grain pointed forward unto the ingathering of the first fruits of the field, just so those who arose with the Yahshua being the first fruits of the dead pointed forward unto the ingathering of the gospel's first fruits with the 120 disciples. Verily, as those who arose with Yahshua ascended with him as the trophies of his victory over the dead and the grave, they thereby became a living type, and thus the wave sheaf of the living. Just as Yahshua rose on the very day that the sheaf was to be offered, likewise the Yahweh Spirit fell upon the 120 disciples on the very day the wave loaves were to be presented before the Yahweh.
Had a rough 2 weeks.
For the apostolic Pentecost was accordingly the prototype of the ceremony of Pentecost, the day that the wave loaves were offered. And since the wave sheaf was a figure of the Yahshua and of those who arose with him as the first of the first fruits of the dead, Hence, the wave loaves were a figure of the 120 spirit-filled disciples, who were the full complement of the first fruits of the dead, and who were gathered in after the resurrection. Isn't this amazing? Today we close out the judgment of the dead in 2002, and at the end of the 11th hour at Kermit, Texas, and lo and behold, there was a wave sheet that came forth from that judgment of the dead period in the antitype. Now, she was the first fruits of the dead back then, and again, he brings forth the first fruits, once again, of the dead here in the antitype. And these facts can more clearly be seen that those whom Yahshua took with him were the living wave sheaf and the only one that has been offered in the heavenly sanctuary. And that as ones raised from the dead, they are the first fruits of the dead, whereas as ones ever living before the Father, they are the living wave sheaf of the first fruits of the living. 144,000 servants of the Elohim who sequentially precede the second fruits and the feast of the tabernacle, for the 120 disciples on the day of the Pentecost being the gospel's first fruits of the dead, it follows that the great multitude added to the church daily thereafter naturally were the gospel's second fruits of the dead. Also, on the 15th day of the 7th month continues the Levitical record of the Yahshua's command concerning the harvest rites. When you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast in Yahweh 7 days, and you shall take you on the first day the boughs of the goodly trees, branches of the palm tree, and the boughs of the thick trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice for the Yahweh your Elohim 7 days. You shall dwell in the booth 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in the booth, Leviticus 23, 39, 40, and 42. As the wave sheaf and the wave loaves are typical, then also the Feast of the Tabernacles must be typical. Otherwise, the ceremony would not have been observed as a part of the harvest rite. And as in the type, the feast was to be celebrated at the close of the final end-gathering of the year's harvest, then correspondingly in the antitype, it must be celebrated at the close of the final end-gathering of the earth's harvest, which is nearing its fulfillment. So the time consumed in producing and in the offering of the wave sheaf and the wave loaf, also in the observing of the Feast of the Tabernacle, is representative of the entire spiritual harvest time of the living and of the dead. Okay, so we had an untypical first of the first fruits gathering, 2002, from among the spiritually dead. Okay. Bearing out this fact, the Spirit of the prophecy said, the Feast of the Tabernacle was not only commemorative but typical, where it celebrated the end gathering of the fruits of the earth and pointed forward unto the great day of the final end gathering, when the Yahshua of the harvest shall send forth his reapers to gather the tares together in the bundles for the fire and to gather the wheat into his garner. At that time the wicked will all be destroyed. Patriarchs and Prophets 5:41. Plainly therefore, since the first and the second fruits of the literal harvest and its attendant rites foreshadowed of a spiritual harvest of the first and second fruits, they are to be climaxed by the antitypical feast of the tabernacles. For I saw the saints, says the servant of Elohim, in the describing of this celebration, leaving the cities and villages and associating together in the companies and living in the most solitary places. Angels provided them food and water while the wicked were suffering from their hunger and thirst. Early Writings, page 282. For thus, ancient Israel's dwelling in the booths typifies modern Israel eventually dwelling in the woods. Irrefutably, therefore, the harvest of the Matthew 13 precedes the close of the probation and is in the time of the end-gathering of the first and second fruits, 144,000, and the great multitude, all the saints who are to be translated. As the light focusing on this point clearly reveals, that the Pentecost after the resurrection was for the ingetting of those who were to die. There must correspondingly be a Pentecost for the ingetting of those who are to be translated. And by the same token of the logic, the wave sheaf and the wave loads must have a double application, each unto the dead and unto the living, together comprising of the total fruits of the antipical harvest. For the apostolic Pentecost and the providing of the power for the end gathering of the sacred fruits up unto the beginning of the judgment of the dead, or judgment of those who are now dead, for token the final Pentecost, which is yet future, and which is to bring the power for the end gathering of the sacred fruits and the living, those who shall never die. In other words, those who died prior unto the final Pentecost are to be judged by the light of the truth reflected through the power of the apostolic Pentecost. It says, from his baptism unto his ascension, Yeshua taught abroad the truth, which was to prepare those who accepted it to impart it. Then on the day of Pentecost, he endued them with his Spirit to proclaim it with a power. Concerning the judgment, the harvest, the servant of the Yahweh declares. Then saw the third angel, said, my accompanying angel, fearful is his work, awful is his mission. He is the angel that is to select the wheat from the tares, and a seal of bronze the wheat, bind the wheat for the heavenly garner. Ready rise, page 118. Now therefore, be ye not mockers, lest your bands be made strong, for I have heard from the Yahweh Elohim of the host, a consumption even determined upon the whole earth. Give ye ear and hear my people, hearken and hear my speech. Isaiah 28, 22, and 23. And now that each one who honestly seeks to hear and to heed the voice of the truth may have the clearest possible grasp of the several aspects of the subject of the judgment, the harvest, they are hereat brought into the consolidated focus. For the reader will remember that those who arose with Yahshua on the 18th day of the first month, follow the chart from page 65, were immortalized and received into the heaven as the antitypical sheep pointing unto the ingetting of the fruits that shall never die. For their resurrection from the dead signified the beginning of the first fruit harvest of the 120 disciples who were to die and be resurrected. For the fact that the followers of Yahshua were not of this one cord before the resurrection is very positive testimony that the first fruits, the 120, of them that sleep did not ripen, become fully converted until after the resurrection. For the 40 days of Yahshua's personal presence on the earth after his resurrection was the time in which the first fruits were gathered in. For after his ascension, the apostolic believers closeted themselves in the upper room and did not emerge for the preaching of the truth until the Pentecost. For the 120 who received the power of the Spirit on the very day that the wave loads were offered, were therefore the antitypical wave loads signifying the completeness of the first fruit harvest. Subsequently came the second fruits of the dead, and the period of which the tares were commingled with the wheat. Wonderful indeed is the way in which Elohim has worked out the plan of salvation and revealed it step by step as necessary. When in 1844 the investigated judgment of the dead and the ingathering of the first fruits of the living began, he did not leave his people in the darkness concerning these events. The very first vision which Sister White received in 1844 was of the 144,000 first fruits, the servants of our Elohim, who shall never taste death. See early writings 13-15. Yahshua, just as Yahshua and those whom he raised and took with him became the prototypical sheep, betokening the ingathering of the first fruits 120 of those who are to be resurrected. So also, when he entered upon his priestly ministration in the first apartment of the heavenly sanctuary, and presented himself and his trophy before his father, they became the antitypical sheaf, betokening the ingathering of the first fruits of those who are to be translated, 144,000 living saints. In the light of this parable, the spiritual condition of the 120 before the apostolic Pentecost is clearly seen to typify the spiritual condition of the 144,000 before the future Pentecost. For the 40 days, Acts 1:3-9, from the resurrection to the ascension, are consequently typical of the period from 1844 until the fulfillment of the marking and slaying, as recorded in Ezekiel 9 and Revelation 7:3-8, Revelation 14:1-5, respectively, and in the Testimonies Ministers, page 445, Testimonies Volume 3, page 266, also Early Writings, page 270-273. As the first fruits are sealed and their tares are removed from among them, are they then, being separate from the influence of the world, as well, the 120 on the day of the Pentecost will receive the outpouring of the Holy Spirit in as much greater a measure as the increase of the wickedness demands a more decided call unto repentance. Testimonies, Volume 7, page 33. For the first fruits of the dead, 120, being a numbered company, and the second fruits of the dead, the multitudes gathered after Pentecost, being an unnumbered company, so correspondingly must it be with the first and the second fruits of the living. Hence the seeding of the 144,000 first fruits, and hence after this, says John, I beheld and lo, a great multitude which no man can number, of all the nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with the white robes and palms in their hands, and all the angels stood round about the throne and about the elders and the four beasts, Revelation 7:9-11. Mark carefully that this great multitude stood before the throne, not bodily, but figuratively only, as viewed in the early writings, page 55, and as is evidenced by the twofold fact that, number one, the angels stood round about the throne and about the elders and the four beasts, showing that the great multitude was outside the angelic circle, and that, number two, the presence of the angels, the elders, and the four beasts about the throne shows that the judgment, Revelation 4:2-6, was still in the session, and that therefore probation had not closed out. For the palms in the hands of the great multitude, Revelation 7:9-11, and the victor's palm placed in every hand of the unnumbered host of the redeemed, the great controversy, 6:46, betokened two entirely different events, for the latter received both a victor's palm and a shining harp, whereas the former had no harps, but only palms. Clearly then, while the palms and the harps of the redeemed host in the heaven are actual guerdons of the victory, the palms of the great multitude on the earth are figurative of the victory palm. Now we see that by the testimony of the prophets, by the parables, and by the ceremonial type, Elohim has wrought the towering structure of the fact that, number one, the judgment for the living is in the harvest time, in the 12th parabolic hour, with the separation of the tares and the wheat, showing that we're in the beginning of the end of the world in this 12th parabolic hour, and that, number two, the judgment for the living of the harvest of the first fruits embraces two phases, two periods, the former for the dead, and the latter for the living. Okay, the latter's for the living. Number three, the one takes place according unto the records in the books in the heaven in the sanctuary, whereas the other takes place simultaneously in the church on the earth and in the books in the heaven. And that number four, the very fact that the subject is now being revealed in its fullness, testifies that we are just on the verge of passing out of the former and into the latter phase and period, and that we are therefore living in the last days of this earth's history. This fourfold view of the judgment, the harvest, thus exalts the truth of it as a pearl of the great price and reveals that the depths of the Elohim's word are unfathomable, its wisdom inscrutable and infinite, without the beginning, without end. Its fount of the knowledge, a perpetual fountain of the truth, its presence ever abiding and its beauty ineffable. Now the reader may be strengthened to hold fast unto this fundamental and all-important truth, as well as to all other truths. We urge him to follow Elohim's method, inspiration in the studying of the scriptures, that he may thereby avoid the many snares. Perhaps the foremost among the multitudes who are snared while doing all they can to run away from the inspired interpretation of the scriptures are the extremists, of whom there are at least two classes, one with the tendency to the literal lies, the other with the tendency to the spiritual lies. Take, for example, the Revelator statement, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of Elohim. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Yahweh, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood? Revelation 6, 9, and 10. For the literalist, on the one hand, would interpret this scripture to mean that the souls were conscious and actually crying out, although the Bible is very explicit that the dead know not anything, Ecclesiastes 9, 5, and 2, were the souls under the altar literally crying out for the vengeance on their murders, then to be consistent, the Yahshua statement, for the voices of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground, Genesis 4:10. Also the statement, all the trees of the field shall clap their hands, Isaiah 55:12. Likewise must be interpreted literally, in spite of the fact that it is impossible physically for blood to cry out and for trees to clap hands. If all, however, are obliged to admit that Abel's blood could not literally cry out, and that the trees can only figuratively clap hands, and then again, to be consistent, the person given to extreme literalization should easily take a hold of the actuality that the dead know not anything, and that they are asleep, unconscious. He ought easily to perceive that the souls of the martyrs crying for the vengeance on their murderers, and that the blood of the Abel crying for the vengeance on his murderer, are cases virtually identical in the circumstance and condition. Both of these find point of illustration in the poetic utterance, I hear a voice crying out, the voice of the withering field, O Yahweh, pity thou me, let showers fall from heaven, quench thou my burning soul. This brings the third rest of this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour calling, that's number 11, kept on the audio archives for this message, and we'll close now with a song. This is my Father's world. This is my Father's world, and truth my listening ear. All nature sings and round me ring the music of the sea. This is my Father's world that rests me in the thought of rocks and trees, the skies and sea, his hand of wonders wrought. This is my Father's world, the birds that caroling, the morning light, the lily white, declare their Maker's praise. This is my Father's world, he shines all that's fair. In the rustling grass I hear him pray. past. He speaks to me everywhere. This is my Father's room. Oh, let me never forget that though the wrong sins are so strong, God is a ruler, yeah. This is my Father's blood. Why should my heart be sad? The Yahshua is King, let the heavens ring. Your reign, let the earth be glad.